Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Here with David Niles and Father Stuart Crevcore. It's great to have you on the Catholic Man Show. It's been a long time coming. And if for those Catholic Man Show listeners who've been here, been listening for a long time, that name will sound familiar because you sent us whiskey one time. Irish whiskey.
Yes, I did. Brought it back from Ireland.
Yes.
Yes. And I think we read the note because that was like what I, you sent this, what was just a, like a well, very well worded, I forget exactly what you said, but it was like this bottle of whiskey was carried across the Atlantic for, you know, and I brought it. Here you. Try it on your show or something. It was.
Better than that.
It was my best try. Okay.
Yeah, but it was a long time ago.
It was the last pilgrimage that I took to Ireland. And one of the places that we visited, which was not necessarily a great religious place to visit, but it was the Jameson Distillery in Middleton, in the south of Ireland. And I still remember going through sort of the cask room. And going through the cask room, I thought, this must be what heaven smells like. Because it was an amazing smell of the whiskey there in that, at the distillery. And it was great. I mean, we did this whole flight testing different types of whiskey, learning the difference between American whiskey, Irish whiskey, Scotch whiskey. And it was a lot of fun. It was a great pilgrimage with some good folks from here in the Diocese of Tulsa. And but I thought of you guys while we were there and purposely got a bottle of, I think it was Black Barrel.
It was Black Barrel.
Yeah, Jameson Black Barrel that I carted back with me in my luggage back across the Atlantic. So you guys could sample it on the show and review it.
Yeah, and we did promptly.
Imminently.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, I got to tell you a brief story about what happened on the farm this week.
You know what? I love
that
the tables are starting to turn, and now like we're gonna get your stories.
Yeah, because you know, for a couple years,
you get more animals. Right? Okay? It's gonna get worse.
So for a couple years, Father, the Catholic Man Show really turned into listen to how Dave messed up on the farm this week.
At least in the first segment, it was like, so what do you got? It's like almost always I had. Something tragic or crazy happened, you know.
Dave's adventures in animal husbandry.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Yes. So mine wasn't tragic, but it was just crazy. The other day we lost a chicken, and it was very clear it was attacked by something.
Yeah.
I assumed it was a hawk because we do have some hawks, you know, around. It was not a hawk. So we're about to go to bed, and Haley goes, "Did we put up the chickens?" And I go, "No. I did not." She's like, "Well, I'll run out there and go put them up real quick." I was like, "Perfect." So she runs out there and then she calls me on her phone and says, "I need you to come out here." I was like, "Well, what's going on?" And she goes, "There is a possum in the coop." And I'm like, "Okay." And she's like, "It's just playing possum. I mean, it is just, you know, very still, but it's at the very corner inside the coop. All the chickens are above, just like freaking out. You know, like squawking and everything, because there's a possum right down there."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Okay, what am I going to do?" Now, unfortunately, I don't have a .22 yet. I do have a .22. I just, it's not at the house. Anyway, so I'm like, "What am I going to do? Okay, I guess I'm going to have to have my 9mm.
Get out my deer
my
rifle.
My shotgun.
Get out my .30-06 to sing down. Yeah.
So I go out there with my 9mm, and sure enough, I mean, it's just, very still, just sitting there. And I'm like, "Okay, we'll see what happens." And so I shoot, and of course, like, chaos goes in the coop because all the birds are freaking out.
Yeah.
And I have some roosters that wake up every morning and choose violence and attack me. And so that's always in, like, so they don't like me even more now. Their lives are coming to a close very soon.
Yeah, they're short. Yeah.
But it was very much an adventure at the end of the night. So we figured out that possums actually kill chickens.
Totally. You know, everything wants to eat a chicken.
Yeah.
Raccoons will eat chickens. Possums will eat chickens. I mean,
So at like, but
everything wants to eat chickens.
But it was like, you know, 10 o'clock at night and I had to go shoot a possum in my chicken coop, which I'm glad, you know.
You need to get an automatic door. Totally worth every penny.
Yeah. That way you don't have to mess with it.
Yeah. So. And it closes before the crepuscular predators come out.
Although I did once have a possum that got into my garage in a former parish, and I still don't know how it got in there. It had to have slipped in when I had left earlier in the evening or something, because I came home, opened the garage door, two bright eyes, and this giant rat-looking thing staring at me.
They're ugly. They're ugly.
And it had chewed through the wires on the garage door opener, so I had to rewire the garage door. It's like because it had apparently was clever enough to think that might be able to get it out on its own, but it did not. So yeah, possums not my favorite animal. I don't care how cute Disney makes them look. They can be a problem.
Yeah. They're a mess. What are we drinking tonight, Dave?
Tonight, we are drinking, it's called Sense of a Haunted Mansion, a product of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, who still does not sponsor the show. But this is a Kolila. It's a product of Kolila. It's a...
It's delicious.
I was trying to see if there was an age statement on here. I don't see one. There's no age statement. Mm. But it says it was... This is interesting. It says it was distilled on the 7th of March, 2012. But it doesn't have an age statement. So maybe the majority of it is a 13-year-old, 12-year-old whiskey. Anyway, what do you think? Have you tried it? What do you think?
I think it's absolutely delicious. What do you think, Paul? You told us right beforehand that you're a fan of the smokier, peatier whiskeys.
Yeah. If I'm going to do scotch, it's got to be the real deal. I want it to have a lot of flavor.
Right.
The smokiness, the peatiness of it is really good.
Yeah. It's not one for lack of flavor.
Oh my God. It is in your face.
Yeah.
Like this one is...
It's really good.
This one is a punch in the mouth.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I'm kind of like what you said, Father. That's what I like.
That's his game. Now, Father, so we didn't give a formal introduction, so I apologize, but that's just how we... do things on the Catholic Man Show. But so, Father, you are a priest in the Diocese of Tulsa. You are the parish priest at St. Mary's. And you also have the school. And what else do you have going on?
You know, really, the Church of St. Mary is large enough. And with the school and everything,
it's one of the largest.
Keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah, it's one of the largest parishes in Tulsa, right? I mean,
it is.
It's one of the bigger ones. Yeah.
And I went there after being at St. Bridget and Tahlequah and San Juan Diego Mission in Stillwell.
Which, if you don't know Oklahoma, those are small towns.
Very small.
Yeah. And they were great parishes. And people ask me all the time, like, what's the biggest difference going from sort of a smaller country parish to a larger city parish?
The budget.
Here in Tulsa. The budget, definitely. But a lot of it is as a priest, you know, you're doing the same things as a priest. Whether you're in a large parish or a small parish, you're going to be administering the sacraments. You're going to be counseling people. And whether it's a lot of people or whether it's relatively few people, you're doing a lot of things. The one thing that you will do less of is things like fixing the toilets or electrics or something, because in a larger parish, there are a lot more staff people. And that for me has been the biggest change.
That sounds nice.
It is and it isn't. I mean, honestly, there's the part of me that kind of enjoyed the self-reliance of the things I learned being in pastor of a small parish. And it's like... In Tahlequah, it was me and our office manager. We were the two full-time staff members. You know, everybody else, we had a few other part-time people, and then we had a lot of volunteer ministry leaders. And so the fact that there are custodians who just do these things now, I'm kind of like, this is luxury, man. This is luxury.
But you're watching them do something. It's like, just so you know, I know how to do that.
Exactly. I'm kind of like, I can unclog my own toilet and change the apparatus inside the toilet tank. I can do those things. I learned.
Rewiring a light fixture and someone says, like, is that up to code? And you're like, how am I supposed to know?
I did that.
I don't know. Did they publish it? And
I did that at my bedroom in my last parish. It was like I needed to replace all of the... all of the plugs in the bedroom. And it's like, I pretty much was like, okay, I can figure this out. first thing, make sure the power is off before you touch anything.
That's rule one. Yeah,
but it was still one of the. Yeah. It was still one of those things where it's okay. After I got it all done and turned the power back on, I'm like, am I going to blow up the rectory?
Yes, or there burn is it that down? Moment where you flip the switch and you're like, all right, if things start lighting on fire, what am I? Like,
what am I going to do?
Yeah, we're going to just immediately turn this back off.
Yep.
I literally stood in the room and waited for something to happen.
Yeah.
And you're nothing like, did. I did
you're
it
like
all
smelling.
Correctly.
You're like, is that an electrical burn? Is that, yeah. Does it smell like smoke? You know? I've been there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is a funny moment though. When you're like, well, I think I did it.
I think that worked.
I think it was, I must have done it correctly.
Right.
Enough.
It gives you a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when were you ordained?
I was ordained in May of 2001. So
okay.
It'll be 24 years this May and coming up on my 25th anniversary. Mm. Awesome.
What is that? Is there like, is that the silver? Is that gold? What? I don't
know.
Is it something? Is it paper? It's not paper.
I guess it's silver anniversary.
Yeah.
I think 50 would silver. Be gold. So.
Okay.
I think it is the 20. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
25 is, nice. It's one of the things.
It's yeah. One.
Paper anniversary actually is.
Was it year one?
I don't know. I don't remember. Okay. I just know that it's a thing.
All right, well, email Dave whenever you figure that out.
Yeah, my email address is Adam.
Really try to keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
We're here with Father Stuart Krevkor, priest of the Diocese of Tulsa, and we have a big announcement that we'll announce on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Men, do you feel stuck in old idols? Or burdened by the pharaohs of our time? Do you know that you're capable of so much more than you are giving today? Exodus 90 is the number one freedom app to help you become the man you were created to be. Exodus 90 is a powerful 90-day journey to freedom in Jesus Christ, and it starts on January 20th. Download the Exodus 90 app today to join tens of thousands of men from all around the world. We begin January 20th. Join us.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, special guest for the Stuart Krevkor, priest of God, in the line of Melchizedek.
All accurate.
Yeah.
So far, keep going.
That's it.
Okay.
I want to save some.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You don't want to go through all your ammo too quickly.
Give it all away up front.
That's right, because then later on you're like, I
messed that up.
It's a lack of prudence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want to make the announcement?
No. Well,
you were teeing it up. I figured you should.
Okay. Yeah. So as many of you know, we are going to Italy. We're going to Rome this year on a pilgrimage. Jubilee year, which is going to be awesome. Also, several new saints that are going to be canonized this year, which is also going to be awesome. And Father Stuart Krevkor is our spiritual guide for the pilgrimage.
Hooray!
So, yeah, so we'll be talking a little bit about the spirituality of a pilgrimage and just like maybe spirituality in general, like the different charisms in different types of spirituality. And so, anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. But if you go to selectinternationaltours.com or just Google Catholic Mancho Pilgrimage, that's probably the easiest way to do it. Just Google Catholic Mancho Pilgrimage. You'll be able to get the information to join us. Join Father Stuart Krevkor, Dave and I. We're bringing our wives as well, Haley and Pamela. Jim, Bo Baggins, and Kathy are going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a whole host of other people. Now, we are only going to take one bus. We don't want it to be a big pilgrimage. We want to be kind of have an intimate. The last time we went to Ireland, last pilgrimage we went to Ireland. It was really great because it was a small group, and that's we really enjoyed it because you get to share life together. You get to share the experience together. You get to know the people, and it's a lot less of herding cats.
It's
so
just
to
a
speak.
Much more. It's a much more intimate experience.
Yes, so we're really excited about it. Again, you can just Google Catholic Mancho Pilgrimage. You'll be able to find it. But yeah, that's what we're going to do.
So, Father, it's the Jubilee year. Can you tell, explain that to people?
What I mean, really, about? The Jubilee year is we have them every 25 years at a minimum within the church, going back to like the 14th century. And so Jubilee years have a very, very long history in the church. And some of them are really huge. Like a lot of people may remember the Jubilee year in 2000. I mean, turn of the millennium.
That seems, that was a really big one. It feels like a big one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a really, really big one. But we also sometimes have other Jubilee years that are declared. Like Pope Francis had declared the Jubilee Year of Mercy several years ago. And Jubilee years are all about really just an outpouring of God's grace, kind of giving us a whole renewed focus on our relationship with God, upon the grace on which we depend in our spiritual lives, and an opportunity just to be renewed in that. And pilgrimage is a really important part of Jubilees. I mean, the very first Jubilee back in the 14th century was something that, you know, there were indulgences were attached to it. You know, it was the first, they built new bridges in Rome as a result of that Jubilee.
Really?
Largely because there was a huge disaster where an old bridge like collapsed under the weight of pilgrims trying to get to St. Peter's.
Wow.
And ugh. So they were...
That is unfortunate, isn't it?
Yes. It was not a great start to that Jubilee year. However, we will not have that problem on this trip at all. But yeah, Jubilee years are just this really great opportunity for us to be refocused in our life of faith. The things that the church does in terms of opening up means of prayer and just growing in our relationship with Christ. And pilgrimage, it's something, it's very true during a Jubilee year. It's very true, I think, even in just life in general, you know, the journey of faith that we are taking. And a Jubilee year really focuses our attention upon the visiting of holy sites, the visiting of holy places.
So does, you know, there's an indulgence for making a pilgrimage. Does that, do you know, does that go back to, did that start in the Crusades? Did it exist before the Crusades?
Oh yeah, I mean, indulgences had existed, I mean, long before in the history of the church.
I'm thinking about the one that's attached to making a pilgrimage.
Yeah, and really, you know, indulgences, pilgrimages oftentimes had that kind of indulgence attached to them, especially because, you know, indulgenced prayers and things within the church are usually things that are requiring an extraordinary effort. You know, it's not something necessarily that you can just sit at home and do. That indeed, for especially in a Jubilee year, but like indulgences attached to that idea of pilgrimage. There are so many of the great pilgrimages within the church. And from ancient times, there was the pilgrimage to Jerusalem that every Christian wanted to be able to do the pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And the Middle Ages, after the discovery of the tomb of St. James the Apostle in Spain,
yeah.
It's like that became one of the other great pilgrimage routes that existed. The shrine of St. Thomas Becket in Canterbury became a huge pilgrimage route in England that gave us Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. You know, all kinds of great pilgrimages that were all about visiting holy sites, calling to mind holy things, and making this kind of extraordinary effort in our spiritual lives, you know, to withdraw from the normal things of daily living and really focus upon how do we grow in that grace of the Lord? You know, how do we beseech that grace? How do we make an effort in our life?
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so Father, when we went to Ireland last time on our pilgrimage, a lot of the feedback was we had a lot of fun, but it was like there was a lot of spiritually enriching moments, right? There's this beautiful kind of combination of like, man, we had a lot of fun. It was great, but also was very, very spiritually enriching. So I'm curious on like what your thoughts are on the idea of like going on a pilgrimage versus a vacation or versus like just getting away, like kind of just like, I just want to go travel somewhere. Maybe the difference is there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is that, you know, we can travel to see different things, to learn about different places. And there's a part of me that loves to do that. I love to see new things, to experience new places, different cultures. That's all great. But a pilgrimage is really something that is about growing in our spiritual lives. And so it's important on a pilgrimage that it's not just a tour where you're rushing from one place to another. You know, it is not a matter of how many things can we see in one day. It's the quality of the time that you spend in those holy places, you know, and it's not just visiting the things that are touristy things. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love to do on a pilgrimage is even sometimes just doing some of my own research to be able to find like what's the out of the way thing that normal pilgrims would probably even overlook if they were just on some sort of, you know, big package tour or something. You know, find the things that are unique. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that is really going to be memorable. And so I always think it is so important to take the time to pray, to savor the experiences and the places that you're visiting, understand their significance.
I'm so glad you said that, because when we went to Ireland last time, we were tempted to go, because there's so much. I mean, you're seeing a whole country, you know, in 10, 12 days, right? And so there's so many different things you can go see. And when we were kind of setting it up, we were tempted to go, okay, let's go here, let's go here, let's go here.
Yeah, because it all sounds so amazing.
It sounds fun, right? And amazing. And Dave and I made the decision of saying, no, we're not going to do that. I would rather do less with higher quality, where we don't feel rushed, where we don't feel like, okay, let's get it. Let's everybody get back on the bus. All right, everybody out. Everybody in. Everybody out. And like, we're just like rushing.
Yeah. All right, we're here. You've got 10 minutes.
Yeah. You got 10 minutes to go pray. Ready, go. You know, but instead to enjoy the time, make it more leisurely, I guess.
Yeah.
I think there's a very high impact.
There's a balance. There's totally a balance, because, mm-hmm. You want to get a chance to see, you know, the things. But I think our pilgrimage to Rome that we've got coming up is going to be so great on that, like, on that level. Also, when you're in Rome, the nice thing is that, you've got free time every day, especially in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, what do you want to go do? You can go see it. You can go do it, you know, if it's not on, you know. Because there's so many churches in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
We won't go to 2% of the churches. You know, we'll be going to the major ones. But I've always viewed a pilgrimage as sort of an analogy for the whole of spiritual life, right? That you're on this journey, and you're going, you're seeking Christ, right? I mean, that's really what we're doing on our pilgrimage. We're not just going to look at the beautiful churches. We will be doing that. And, you know, even just from a historical standpoint, like you were saying, Father, that is incredible. But really the point of the pilgrimage, what makes it a pilgrimage, is that we're not going to a place, we're not seeking out places as much as we are a person, right, in Christ. And so in that way, it's an analogy for the whole spiritual life, you know, throughout our whole life.
Yeah, and one of the things I always really encourage people to do as well on a pilgrimage, I mean, I do this myself. I mean, journaling is always a good thing in our spiritual lives, I think, because it helps us to put things down in black and white and go back and revisit them. That's particularly important, I think, on a pilgrimage. Like, I journal every day just to remember, like, the things I saw and experienced, you know, the significance of it for me as I experienced it that day, knowing that, you know, 5 years later, I'm going to have trouble remembering what we did on what day on that trip. Mm-hmm. You know, what did I see? How did I feel when we visited that church? You know, little moments that you would lose and forget about in your memory. Mm-hmm. So I always encourage people, I said, you know, journaling is a very good idea when you are on a pilgrimage, because, you know, even though we're trying to take our time and really absorb the spiritual significance of the places, you know, you want to be, I think it's a great thing if you've journaled that you can go back and relive that pilgrimage. I do that. I will go back sometimes and look at my journals from past pilgrimages and just relive the experience. And that itself, it's like getting to redo the pilgrimage in a way.
That is a great idea. I don't journal daily, but on a pilgrimage, I could see that really helping with my overall experience. And like you said, being able to go back and like, oh, I forgot about that. And reading my own words from that day, like putting me back in the scene in a way that wouldn't be possible if it was just my own memory, you know, a year later. Okay, we'll be right back. Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Shout out to all of our patrons. Go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. If you sign up to be a patron, or you already are a patron and you're going on the pilgrimage with us, we're going to buy you dinner and drink while we're there. So go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. All of your support goes into the show. Does not go to any needy families like mine or Dave's, but into the show.
Indeed.
So, and we're here with Father Stuart Crevecore, who is going to be leading, be our spiritual guide throughout the pilgrimage. And I didn't even mention this part, but we're going to be able to see a lot of Eucharistic miracles, like a lot of places where Eucharistic miracles have taken place as we go on pilgrimage, which is also going to be amazing. It's like, what else do you need to know? I mean, there's, we have a lot of opportunities here.
Yeah. Christianity in Europe is so old.
It's like the
yeah, I mean, there's just, there's been so many things that have happened. And so it's just so much different when you're in Europe, because it's like, oh, you know, we've got like a few hundred years of Christianity here in America.
Mm-hmm.
And Europe is like, you know what? That's so cute, America. You're like a 3-year-old,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're like a 21-year-old, 20-year-old.
Interesting analogy. Yeah.
So,
Father, what is, like, just for clarification, maybe in defining terms, what is a Eucharistic miracle? What do we mean when we say that? And what should we be expecting maybe on the pilgrimage?
Eucharistic miracles, they really are sort of many and varied. I mean, most of the time, you know, there are instances of Eucharistic miracles that are simply that, you know, the Blessed Sacrament has been miraculously preserved, like way beyond what should be its normal span. There are a lot of Eucharistic miracles where the host has bled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are Eucharistic miracles that, you know, they're there in really in order to, I think, as a powerful witness of what it is that we believe about the Eucharist, that it is truly the body and blood of Christ. And these Eucharistic miracles that, interestingly enough, so often are the result of somebody's lack of faith, that the Eucharist was being improperly treated, or a lack of belief in the real presence, and that was the instant and the moment in which something miraculous happened with the Eucharist to be a powerful affirmation of what it is as that sacrament of Christ's body and blood. And it's a wonderful thing, I think, you know, as part of a pilgrimage and in the Jubilee year, because, you know, we talk about, you know, the final time that somebody receives the Eucharist as part of last rites being the opportunity to, that it's food for the journey, it's viaticum. But really, it's the food for our journey every day. It's the food that we are being given by Christ in order to strengthen and nourish us as we are going about living our lives as his disciples. And so every time we are attending Mass, we are receiving that food for the journey. And so anything we can be doing to really just increase our love and devotion for the Blessed Sacrament, you know, to visit the shrines dedicated to these various Eucharistic miracles, I think is a powerful affirmation of our belief in what it is that we receive when we receive that sacrament of Christ's body and blood, what it's meant to do for us in our spiritual lives.
How do you feel that pilgrimages kind of affect the prayer life? I'll give you an example. Like, I remember when we went to Ireland, seeing one of the nails from Christ's crucifixion was something that like changed like my prayer life. It changed, like, it vividly like stamped the reality of Christ's death and made an impression on my soul, to where I still think about that moment of, I can't believe this was pierced, but, you know, used to pierce through Christ, through my Lord and Savior. You know, it was just something that, like I said, like kind of stamped something in my soul where it helped actually, as I'm meditating on Christ's passion, as I'm meditating on Christ's love for me, it affected my prayer life. Maybe what are your thoughts on how pilgrimages can affect prayer life?
You know, I think pilgrimages do a lot in the same way that retreat experiences can do a tremendous amount to deepen our relationship with Christ, because it is time that we are setting aside for the Lord. Pilgrimages are an opportunity to really be growing closer to the Lord as we are making that journey. And it's different, I think, in some ways than just sort of a retreat, because a retreat is an experience of just sort of withdrawing from the world. A pilgrimage is journeying within the world to a holy place. And that pilgrimage is something that lives on in our memory. You know, as you say, it's like having that moment of beholding one of the nails of Christ's crucifixion. And that is just something that is seared into your memory. Mm-hmm. That is something that is like you'll just never forget. And pilgrimages give us that opportunity, you know, in that journey, in traveling to a destination, to really appreciate the wonder of what God has done and have those moments that do sear themselves into our memory, that we are able to go back and revisit and remember like how I felt in that moment. And that is something that when we come back from a pilgrimage, in much the same way as when we come back from a retreat, how do we recapture that deep sense of faith? And pilgrimages are just great because they do have particularly memorable moments. There will be some things in a pilgrimage that stand out to people that are transformational moments, that are moments that it's like, yeah, that I am never going to forget that. And especially later in life when we are going through a difficult time or when our faith is struggling, you know, we remember that moment and it helps us to reaffirm that faith and that foundation in Jesus Christ.
It's like the encounter of, you know, I remember when we went to St. Coleman's and I stepped foot in that church and realized this is the most beautiful church I've ever stepped in, you know, I've never ever experienced. It's interesting how this is how beauty just affects your life. It affects the way your memory, it affects how you remember things, the moments that you were there, how you felt. You know, it's like a transcendental, but like the effect of beauty in your prayer life and the architecture, the arts, the culture just plays such a pivotal role in your spiritual life.
They do. I mean, beauty has this amazing power to attract. And, you know, when you go on a pilgrimage, I mean, you may visit a lot of different places. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be very humble that you experience as part of a pilgrimage as well. You know, but then you also see these amazing churches that are the expression of the faith of past generations. And you just look at it and think, like, how extraordinary that human beings using our own craftsmanship have created these great monuments to faith, that we've expressed our faith in such an extraordinary way. You know, but then there are also just the humbler moments too that I think we sometimes experience. I mean, one of the things I remember most from a trip I made on the Camino de Santiago was just like stopping. I was traveling with a priest friend of mine and we stopped in this little, I don't even know that it was really a village. It was a couple houses at a crossroads. But there was a bench there at the crossroads. And like a bunch of dogs had started barking in one of the yards when we walked by. But we decided to stop there and do our divine office. And so we stopped there. We sat on the bench. It's like we saw some lady like look out of her window or something on the upper story and look down at us. And she came out and brought us basically like hot chocolate and rolls. It's like in the morning.
Wow.
And she asked us where we were from. And because it was a pilgrimage route to Santiago de Compostela that not many people at that point were traveling yet. So they didn't see a whole lot of pilgrims and certainly not American pilgrims on that route. But, you know, that act of charity that lady showed us, it's like these two random American priests, you know, sitting on a bench, you know, praying, you know, just taking a moment's rest. And that is the moment from that pilgrimage I actually remember the most. That simple act of charity that this lady who came out to give us something for breakfast, you know, and just, you know, how friendly, you know, she was. She wanted to know a little bit about us. And I'm like, there are a lot of those moments on a pilgrimage too. You know, great and mighty cathedrals, you know, amazing Eucharistic miracles, you know, tremendous experiences in some of these great historic cities in Europe. But, you know, at the same time, there are going to be ordinary moments too, that as we reflect back on them too, it's like that is an encounter of faith, even in a simple and humble kind of circumstance.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. There's also something I think to being in another country and being like experiencing the role of a foreigner, which is very like this dynamic, it's like a very crucial part of especially Judaism, right? Like in the Old Testament, that for years, this, you know, decades, the Israelites were just foreigners everywhere they went, you know, and that they were seeking out this promised land. And so that we kind of put on the coat of the foreign, well, not putting on a coat, we actually are foreigners. We're not just putting on the coat of a foreigner, but there's something very humbling, you know, especially if you don't speak the language, you become dependent on the charity of the natives or of somebody to help you with little things. There's something that it's beautiful about that experience.
It really is, because you know we are sort of strangers in a foreign land, yeah. You know, but part of the whole experience of, especially in a Jubilee, or places that customarily welcome large numbers of pilgrims, is that it is welcoming the foreigner, into your midst. It is showing hospitality, to those who have traveled sometimes great distances. Some people who have experienced great hardship in order to be able to make this pilgrimage to visit the site.
So Google Catholic Mantra Pilgrimage, that's where you want to go. Join us this year in October for our pilgrimage. But we are we have one more segment. So we'll be right back here in just a few minutes.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Brother Stuart Krebcor. We're talking about the spirituality of pilgrimage. We are going on a pilgrimage to Rome this October 2025. We want you to go with us. But we will do another episode where we go through the details of our pilgrimage. We should do that soon. But today we're just talking about... like I said, that spirituality with Father Stuart, who will be our chaplain on the pilgrimage. Father, what are some of the important lessons? Because you've done many pilgrimages. What are, as you reflect on them, some like these are common graces or common lessons that you've taken away from your pilgrimages that you've done in the past?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is that we learn when we are on a pilgrimage, that it really is something of a journey. Not everything is going to go right. Luggage is going to get lost. The bus is going to be late. You're going to have to learn sometimes it's like waiting for the person who somehow has gotten lost souvenir shopping, or is
for
like
the third time.
Yes, yeah. Wandered off into the gift
Kathy.
Shop. Yeah, it's like you need to practice charity amongst the group of pilgrims. And that can sometimes be, a bit of a struggle. You're not necessarily going to like everybody that you're on pilgrimage with. But at the same time, there are all of those things that are helping us grow in charity when we see it as a spiritual journey and not just, it's like, hey, I paid to take a tour here and I want to make sure I get my money's worth. It's like,
right.
That's not the goal of a pilgrimage. That's not why you do it. It really is focused upon our spiritual growth and the opportunities that a pilgrimage presents to really be growing in that relationship with God, growing in that love of our neighbor that is so often a part of practicing charity as part of the pilgrimage.
What's your attitude towards this? When you're on pilgrimage, is your opinion that absolutely everything that happens to you is like on purpose? That,
Providential?
Yeah, that it's, I mean, And I know this is kind of like, this is kind of a softball question. But
God's permissive or active will?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think, let me ask you the question and then
and
tell
I'm gonna answer it.
And then tell you what I think about what I think the answer is.
Dude, you're so good at interviewing. This is like stereotypical like, wow, Catholic Mancho stuff.
Such a great answer you gave there when I said it for you there, Father. But I do think that there's something special about pilgrimage that, you know, the Lord, and probably it's just my openness to it, you know, like the Lord wants the same goodness for me all the time. But I don't know. In my experience, like being on pilgrimage, even when the difficult things happen, I have the outcomes, I don't know, seem to be more consequential. Like they seem to be more meaningful. Do you have that experience?
I do. I mean, part of the whole experience of, I think, being on a pilgrimage is that spirit of openness to what it is that God wants to teach us as part of this journey. You know, as we go through life, I mean, really in a lot of ways, are there providential moments in our daily life, you know, in our whole journey as a disciple, just day by day, whether we're on a pilgrimage or not? Absolutely. But on a pilgrimage, we are open in a particular way, I think, to being able to see those things in a new light. You know, and because it is something that is also taking us out of our ordinary daily experience, it gives us an even greater opportunity to be experiencing those moments of grace.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that God is really calling me to do? I remember, you know, a good friend of mine, and I knew him when he was a college student at Oklahoma State University, Father Kelly Edwards. But he said it's like, you know, the experience of pilgrimage helped him discern his vocation to the priesthood.
Hmm.
Wow. You know, the pilgrimages we did with the students at Oklahoma State when I was chaplain there, he said that had a real impact on his discernment of the priesthood. Because it was time away. It was time focusing upon what God was calling him to do. And he said, those pilgrimages that we did, you know, as when he was a college student, he said that had a big impact on his ability to be open to God's will, what God was calling him to do in his life. And I think pilgrimages can do the same for each and every one of us, that it's a real opportunity to be open to what God is calling us to experience as part of it. And there will be trials, and there will be a lot of graces and blessings as part of it as well. And it's all part of that experience of the journey that we have when we are on pilgrimage.
One of the beauties about pilgrimage is obviously you're leaving your day-to-day life to go do something different. So you're out of the norm. You're out of your routines. You're out of I got to check my email today. I have work. You're kind of leaving all those things behind to experience the pilgrimage. And so I wonder what the importance and impact of being able to turn that off and have those still and quiet moments in pilgrimage, like while you're on pilgrimage, that the pilgrimage actually lends itself towards those quiet and still moments and the impact on prayer that it has while you're on pilgrimage. Like how does the relationship and correlation of the silence and stillness and kind of leaving behind all the distractions of your day-to-day life have an impact on prayer? Maybe open up the avenue of grace, so to speak, that God can kind of come in and open to, you know, your heart is more open, I guess, to receive that grace.
I think that's very true. I mean, on a pilgrimage, we do just have this extraordinary openness to what it is that God is calling us to experience, because sometimes we can enter with a lot of expectations, but really we have no way of knowing exactly what God is going to reveal to us as part of a pilgrimage. I think that's a useful prayer whenever starting a pilgrimage, you know, whenever starting that kind of journey, is it's like, you know, what finding something to focus on in our prayer life that we particularly need some insight on. You know, where what do we need the Holy Spirit to tell us, to reveal to us about something we're maybe struggling with in our life, you know, a particular cross that we're bearing, a particular intention that we need to bring to prayer, you know, something, you know, within our own heart that needs to be opened up to that grace of God. You know, it's good to almost, I think, start a pilgrimage with a kind of intention. To have, you know, to really be genuinely seeking that grace of God to open up and reveal to us what is it that God wants to show me on this pilgrimage. You know, and not to have preconceived notions about what that is, but just to let the Holy Spirit, let God do that work in opening us up to what we're meant to experience, what we're meant to learn as a part of that journey.
What is your, what do you like to do to prepare for the pilgrimage before you go, you know, in the days, weeks leading up to departure?
I tend to be a super detailed and organized person, and I oftentimes like to do my own research on the places that we're going to go and visit. Now, part of that might be because I've learned that tour guides are not always super reliable or tell you everything or give you the most Catholic interpretation of something. Mm-hmm. There can sometimes be a certain cynicism on the part of tour guides who have done this and like given this talk like over and over and over again. So, I mean, I kind of always like to do a little bit of my own research about some of the places that we're visiting, especially because it shorthands that ability to enter into the experience when you go. You know, that you're not focused on, it's like, okay, I have no idea what we're going to be doing today. You know, that it helps me sort of enter in more quickly into that experience of everything that's packed into a pilgrimage. But I think the most important thing that we can be doing, I think, is really beginning that process of preparing ourselves in prayer. You know, one of the things I think is so important on a pilgrimage, and again, what distinguishes it from just a tour or a vacation or something, is that it's good to take the time that is necessary to absorb what it is that one is experiencing on a pilgrimage. You know, there has to be that experience of letting it sink in and not rushing the experience. And we do that, I think, a lot by preparing ourselves in prayer before we even like get on the plane. You know, it is a matter of really learning what it is that God is calling us to experience. And that's a process of discernment that happens, again, before you ever head to the airport, you know, to leave on a pilgrimage. You know, it is a matter of really disposing ourselves to what is it that God is calling me to. And so the process of prayer prior to a pilgrimage is also extremely important. You know, it's not all going to happen just on the pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. The better prepared we are for what it is that we're going to experience, the more open we will be to the graces that God is prepared to give us.
Almost like a little liturgical season, you know, having a Lent before the Easter or something, you know, a good period of preparation.
Well, we can maybe think of it as like Advent, expectation, and waiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good one. So what is it that you're most, like, what's the place that you're most excited to go on this pilgrimage? Like, what's exciting to you? All of it is, I'm sure, is exciting, but like, what's one place that maybe you are really looking forward to?
You know, I think, you know, looking at a lot of the places that we're going to visit, I mean, one of the things I'm most excited about, oddly enough, considering how many times I've been there before, is the Holy Door at St. Peter's, because I have not been in Rome for a Jubilee year before. And so while I have been to St. Peter's many times, the opportunity to like walk through the great Holy Door through which millions and millions of pilgrims have gone, you know, before me in previous Jubilees, that is going to be kind of an awesome experience. I mean, St. Peter's is always sort of mind-blowing. You know, no matter how many times you've been there, it's kind of mind-blowing. But, you know, it is the opportunity to like go through those holy doors that are only opened in a Jubilee year is just phenomenal. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that. So many of the places, I mean, that we're going to visit, I think are, some of them are places I've not been before. So that's going to be exciting too.
Hard to know.
Yeah,
what to expect.
I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
Father, thank you so much for joining us. You've also been a staunch supporter of Catholic Radio here in the diocese, which we're very grateful for. Support your life, local Catholic radio station where you are. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
I'm glad you said St. Peter's. We'll keep going for just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was thinking too. Like, I don't know if you can, I guess if you live in Rome and you go to St. Peter's all the time, I mean, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I remember like Father Jack Gleason telling me about when he was studying as a seminarian in Rome, and he said,
he studied at the NAC?
Yeah, he studied at the North American College, and he said, you know, the first couple months that you're over there and you're walking across St. Peter's Square on your way to class every day. And he said, it's like, you're just like, wow, I'm in Rome. And then he said, you know, the thing is, after like the first month or so, he said, it's like, yeah, there's St. Peter's. I don't have time to look. It's like, you know, you're just on your way to class every day and you're just surrounded by all of this history and art and monumental architecture and, you know, this great history of Christianity that surrounds you in the eternal city. And he was kind of like, yeah, when you live here, you know, you kind of just take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you have to eventually. It's sad to think about that happening, but it, of course, going to happen. You know, you can't just live on this like emotional high of like being, yeah. And you would just be, right. I don't know, your brain would get fried after a, you know, period of time.
Yeah, or something,
if you kept that, you know, level of energy and excitement all the time. But Rome is just a weird place. It really sank in for me when we came to a McDonald's in a 1,000-year-old building. It was like, this place is crazy. But like, that's just
modernity.
Yeah, like that's just the building that's here. I mean, right. So that's where put a McDonald's in it. You know,
it's
just so weird. And
yeah, I mean, you can't turn over a spade full of dirt in Rome and not like come across some, you know, ancient monument or piece of like ancient Roman history or something. It really is an amazing city.
Yeah, I like to just pick a direction and start walking, or like maybe like, hey, let's go here, but let's just kind of amble our way, because around every corner is some gorgeous church. I mean, it's like this church, not on the map because it's just another one, you know, but you walk by and it's like, is that a church? It's like, that's either like a Roman temple of like to some god, which now is a Catholic, now is a Christian church. And you just go in and you're like, wow, they're just gorgeous. Every single one.
I still remember, it's near St. Mary Major, but there's this tiny ancient little church called St. Pudenciana, who was one of the first disciples St. Peter made in the city of Rome. But it was in this tiny little church is preserved like the altar at which St. Peter celebrated Mass when he first arrived in Rome. I'm kind of like, it's a tiny little, like, who would know this is here kind of church. It's not even open that often. It just happened to be open when Teresa Witcher, our former vocation secretary, and I were like wandering along the street and we're like, oh, look, a church. Let's go inside. And it's like an amazing bit of like Roman Catholic history right there.
And it's not only that the church you go into is gorgeous, but it's like, oh, and here's the relic of, it's like, here's Mary's scarf, or, you know, like, it's like, still have something amazing inside, and it's just, you know,
that's
Rome.
That's like one of my favorite memes about Catholicism is, it's like the ones that are kind of like, it's like, you know, we have, you know, a Christian rock band and, know, like, you know, an amazing worship experiences in our local Protestant church. And it's like, we have Mary Magdalene's femur. Yeah. It's like, that is the coolest part about being Catholic.
It's also a little bit weird, but also very cool. You know?
Oh, man. I'm just pumped to go. I can't wait. It's going to be great. And it's going to be great to have our wives go with us.
And, you know, just thinking like to our pilgrimage to Ireland, I still think about the people that came with us
absolutely
on that trip. And I pray for them still. Mm-hmm. And
me too.
I'm sure that they also think about the people, you know. There's a real friendship that develops on pilgrimage because you're having such, you know, even if you've never met these people before, all of a sudden, you know, friendship is the basis of it is like things in common. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have something that's so precious to you, this, you know, trip that you got to spend, you know, pursuing Christ together. And that's a pretty important thing to have in common. And mm-hmm. so it really does create, it's not a synthetic friendship. It actually is the real essence of friendship, even if you didn't know these people mm-hmm. before and you didn't spend actually that much time together in the grand scheme of things, you know? So I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I'm good. Father, you have anything else?
No, just really looking forward to the experience, and it's been a while since I actually led a pilgrimage anywhere. So I'm kind of excited that this. I mean, really, I think almost since COVID, this is like really the first pilgrimage that I've gone on, and so I'm excited about it.
All right, Google it, Catholic Man Show Pilgrimage.